Venerable monks and dear friends in Dhamma, or Dharma, what you call. In the tradition which I come from, they call it Dhamma. In other traditions, they call it Dharma, but it means the same thing, basically Buddha's teachings. So today, you have come here to listen to something that should ideally help you in your life. And that is Dharma, Buddha's teaching. Now, how does it help you in your life, if I were to ask you? Basically, what does really help us? If we have to help ourselves, what is the thing, what is the way to help ourselves? We can know ourselves correctly if we can. Then we can help ourselves correctly. By knowing means knowing what happens inside us, what happens in our mind, what happens in our body. Knowing them correctly can tell us what is the best way of conducting ourselves. In other words, gaining direct experiential wisdom about ourselves is the key to being successful. How do you do that is the question. Like, for example, you are just sitting here and doing meditation a few minutes before. So when you do meditation, what do? You look within yourself. You try to know what is happening in the mind. You try to understand what is happening inside us. You try to understand the realities within ourselves. Because when we try to look for realities outside, there is no end. We can just keep on looking for one object or the other, but we can never find enough. And the realities that are outside essentially are also inside. If you see outside, you will see body. If you see, you'll see beings, living beings, for example. What is a living being? The body and the mind. And you will see inanimate objects. You will see tree, you will see house, you will see car, you will see things. They are also material things. So you are basically looking, when you are looking outside, basically looking into mind and matter. We also possess the same thing, mind and matter. And that's why Buddha said, in this fathom-long body, the mysteries of the universe can be found. That's why, because then we can find the same things. Basically, when we look outside, we look at different things, diverse things. We are not looking at something very different from ourselves. We are looking at mind and matter. We are trying to understand mind and matter. But there is surely a better way of understanding mind and matter, and that better way is to know it by yourself, know it by your own meditative effort. So when you look inside in your meditation, for example, if you do the breathing meditation, which I guess most of you would be aware, looking into one's breathing. And when you look into your breathing, then you see the breath, you see the in-breath and out-breath. You see the change in the breath, in-breath and out-breath. And then you see there's a correlation between the kind of thoughts that arise in your mind and the kind of breath that you are experiencing. Depending on the wholesome thoughts, the breath comes down, it becomes slower. Depending on unwholesome thoughts, bad thoughts, the breath increases, the breathing pattern becomes faster. Like this. These are small self-discoveries that we can all make by ourselves. And when we can make these small discoveries, we can use it for our own benefit. In the sense, then you can correlate and understand, if I were to create good thoughts, my mind becomes calm. If I were to create bad thoughts, my mind becomes restless, which is a sign of unhappiness for sure. Restlessness, you can never say restlessness is a sign of happiness. If that was the case, then people who are very restless, they need not go to the psychiatrist, but they need to go to the psychiatrist. So which means it's not a sign of happiness anyways. So if that is the case, then we can understand that if my mind is restless, then there is something bad going on inside me, not something good. If my mind is not restless, then there is something good happening inside. These are small things, but these are practical nuggets of wisdom that we all can get by ourselves, and we can all use it for our own benefit. But before we do that, before we actually start knowing ourselves meditatively, we should know there is a path of doing it. It's not just like random ways of doing things. Random ways do not lead to anywhere. Trust me, it does not. It just leads to more and more mess. So when you say you have to find something, you have to understand something, then you have to have a method. You have to have a proper method of knowing something, finding something. And what is the method? Buddha has given us a method to do this. And the method is, first of all, most importantly, training oneself in ethical conduct, in moral conduct. When we train ourselves in moral conduct, then automatically we are doing not a physical act, it's a physical activity, training ourselves in ethical conduct. But more than that, it's a mental exercise. You have to look into your mind all the time to see, to take care of your own conduct, to control your own conduct, to channelize your energy in the right way. So it's basically not only a physical activity, it's also very much of a mental exercise. And this ethical, establishing oneself in ethical conduct, is just a prerequisite for training oneself for a higher practice, that is meditative practice, that is doing meditation. So when you train yourself in ethical conduct, which means you are trying to take care of yourself, your physical actions, and also if you have to take care of yourself, of your physical actions, you mean you have to take care of your mental action also all the time, because body and mind are connected all the time. So you cannot take care of your physical actions without controlling the mental actions. So basically, when you are practicing ethical conduct, you are taking care of physical and mental behavior. And then the meditation takes it to a little higher level, when you actually start looking and exploring your mind, looking and start knowing things by yourself. What happens in the mind, for example? As I said, restlessness is a sign of unhappiness. Peacefulness is a sign of happiness. But if you are to go anywhere, see people, in, for example, see people in this city, if you see, you will see most people are restless. And that's not the bigger problem. Most people think by being restless they are happy. That is actually the bigger problem. Means basically people are just living with some kind of, what should I say, unwise view, and thinking this unwise view is actually the wise view. That's the kind of view most people are having. That's the kind of understanding most people are having about themselves. I'm not talking about other people. Most people are having that kind of perception about themselves. And so if they start with a wrong premise, I do not see any chance of them reaching the right conclusion. That does not happen. That is not going to happen. That can never happen. So basically, they are starting with a wrong premise and then just going around and round and round and round in creating more and more wrong premises within themselves. And then it becomes a mess, and then they need to go to the psychiatrist in so many cases. And psychiatrists are no good in any case. I can tell you, because I was visiting a psychiatrist, like a hospital in Chicago, where the psychiatrists the doctors were asking me how to handle this patient, how to handle that patient, which means their degrees are of no great use. After being doctors and after practicing, if they have to ask a monk who never studied psychiatric things, then I have serious doubt about their, and they're supposed to be like doctors practicing for 10 years, 15 years. They should be knowing their business. I'm not supposed to tell them what their business is. But they are not sure of how to deal with people when people come to them with the depression. So basically, which means it really does not help. It just gets more and more messy if we do not start correcting ourselves from within. And we can do that. That is the beauty of it. We can really do that if we are looking into our mind, if we are practicing this ethical conduct, if we are trying to look into our own behavioral pattern, physical and mental behavior, and then we are trying to see what are the good things happening, what are the bad things happening. Are these good things really good? Are they really making my mind happy? Are these bad things really bad? Like, for example, today is a Sunday. And if you were to tell some of your friends, okay, let's go to the temple, let's go do some meditation, let's go and listen to somebody speaking about something, they will say, it's a Sunday morning, I have got some leave, I'll go and have lunch and then go for a movie. I do not have time for useless things. Like, for example, going to temple, listening to somebody speaking. Some people might consider it useless. I do not take offense. I do not take offense because I understand they do not really know. So I do not really take offense. But the thing is, with that kind of perception to start with, people do not reach anywhere. That's why you can see, in spite of earning a lot of money or doing well in their lives, people are really not really getting what they're actually trying to get. What I mean is happiness. What they essentially are trying to get is happiness. So if they are to earn money, if they are to become successful in life, if they are to become rich or powerful, that is not their ultimate aim. Trust me, if you were to ask somebody that I can make you very rich and famous and powerful, but you will remain unhappy, trust me, nobody wishes to be that. That's the basic aim, that people, what they do for the sake of gaining happiness. But the way they do, they actually gain unhappiness instead of gaining happiness. And the reason is they do not know how to go about it, how to find it within themselves, how to train oneself in the right way. And that's where the entire thing goes wrong. But if people were to do otherwise, people were to train themselves in ethical conduct, in meditative practice. Because if I am telling you to train yourself in ethical conduct, in meditative practice, not for anybody else's benefit. I am telling you all these things because of your own personal benefit more than anything else. We all love ourselves. We all love ourselves, but we do not know how to make ourselves happy. Ethical conduct is not some big mumbo-jumbo that you need to practice to reach some esoteric state. It is a practice to become happy. Meditative practice based on ethical conduct is not some very the ritualistic or some kind of big, nothing esoteric, nothing metaphysical, nothing about it. It is to understand oneself. To understand oneself, to understand one's own behavior, one's own inner nature, good things and bad things that are there in us, good things and bad things that are always active, always working, always going up and down, always reacting, always creating reactions, external reactions that we can see by ourselves, and in the process always produce some kind of unsatisfactoriness. So these basically these things are to be practiced not for anything else but to make ourselves happy. And like I was visiting a lot of places, I have been to all kinds of weird places in my trip. I have been to prisons, I have been to Air Force Academy, I have been to universities, I have been to colleges, I have been to meditation centers, I have been to temples, you see. So all kinds of people I have met. It was quite an enriching experience, I must say. Some of the times, many people, if they are to make their effort, for example, I was talking to one of these prison inmates in Buena Vista in Colorado. And he said, he came up to me after I gave a talk, taught them meditation, and then he came up to me and said that my entire life I have to basically spend in jail because his case, he has got a lifetime, basically lifetime. So he will spend the rest of his life in jail. And then he said, how do I do it? How do I manage this thing? Because he doesn't seem to be too old. He might be in his mid-30s. So he has to spend the rest of his life in jail. So I said, still, it is not that bad a place to live in. Come to think of it, you have a lot of time for yourself. And you have a lot of friends also with whom you can have a good time. And also you have a lot of time for yourself to look inside you, to understand you, to discover you. And at the same point of time, you don't have to really be too much worried about social security because government and the people are taking care of it. So really you can forget thinking about the social security also. And then he said, he actually admitted, yes, that might be a good idea. And that was a good thing. I mean, people can understand. He said, yes, what you say is actually correct. I also thought, but I could never think it in this way, but what you tell me is correct, actually. This is actually not that bad a place to practice meditation, not that bad a place to practice dharma. So initially he had some idea. He used to go to some Tibetan Buddhist temples before actually he landed up in prison. I did not know what he learned, what caused him to go to prison, but anyways. So the thing is, so he said that yes, that might be a good idea because since I am here all by myself, I can do something about myself. But I'm not telling you should all go to the prison and discover this thing. But all I'm telling you is your lives are still better. I mean, that fellow, come to think of it, his life is not really great. He cannot go outside of prison all his life. He has to stay within those boundaries. But still, he is willing to make an effort to make his life better. What I am trying to say is, then people who are outside surely has got much better opportunities to make our life better. But what happens in real life is that since we are outside, since we are not bound by the prison rules, since we are not bound by too many things, we are free to do whatever we wish to do, we end up doing wrong things instead of right things. That's the big problem. Since there is no external restriction on us, we end up doing improper things rather than proper things. We end up doing unwise things instead of doing wise things. Because we think since we are free, and this freedom, in the enjoyment of this freedom, we are free to do anything and everything. The only little thing we miss most of the time is doing anything and everything can lead to some difficulties in our life, can lead to some problems in our life. But if we are to just be a little restrained, thinking again before we act, before we react, is this proper? Is this the right way of reacting? Is this the reaction that will make me happy? If I were to ask myself, when you get angry, when you get upset, when you feel too greedy, ask yourself, is this the reaction that really makes me happy? Maybe I will look into myself and see, is this the right reaction that I am generating or is this the wrong reaction that I am generating? If you were to look yourself, you will understand that is not the right reaction. But unfortunately, The only thing that we do not read in this entire world is our own mind. We read all kinds of books. We finish libraries. I'm sure there might be people in this country who might have finished at least half of US Congress library, but may not have bothered to look into their mind. And that's the problem. That's the biggest problem. Because if we do not look within ourselves, if we do not practice this ethical conduct, if we do not practice this meditation, if we do not cultivate the good things in life, we do not really gain the ability to understand ourselves correctly. And if we do not gain the ability to understand ourselves correctly, then we do not know what is the best way to find happiness for each one of us respectively. So we can all be happy. Basically, what I'm trying to say is we can all be happy. Every moment we can be happy. Anywhere we go, we can be happy. Whether you get hot water or cold water, whether your flight is delayed or super delayed, still doesn't matter. My flights, a couple of my flights were super delayed, actually. When it was supposed to start at 11 o'clock, it started at, one started at evening, I think 5 or 6, another started farther late, got again stuck in the blizzard. But still, I mean, I was trying to find a reason for me to be unhappy. I was desperately trying, let me be unhappy, but I could not find a reason to be unhappy in spite of all those things, because I did not see it a reason for unhappiness. Because it's supposed to change. That's the nature of the very fundamental essence of the world, that things are supposed to change. See, if you are all in good health, for example, today, you must be happy, okay, I'm having good health. Okay, that's wonderful. But does it mean that you will always enjoy good health for the rest of your life? Or does it mean, since I have good health today, it is natural that I will have bad health tomorrow or day after? It is natural that we'll have bad health tomorrow or day after. Or day after, I mean, whatever. Some day or the other, because both are part of life itself. Simple. If good health is part of life, can we say bad health is not part of life? If success is part of life, can we say failure is not part of life? We cannot say like that. It's impossible. It is stupid to say success is only part of life and failure is not part of life. It is stupid to say like that. It is part of life. That's the very essence of living in this world. Children, when they are born, they are small. Then they grow as a full-fledged person, man or woman. Then they grow old, then they die. This is the process of living itself. This is the very nature of living in this world as a human being. Is it too difficult to admit, too stressful to admit? But when people start getting old, when people become sick, when people are about to die, they are too much stressed. A lot of these people are too much stressed. Why? Because they do not really see simple things, that if I was at one point of time, a small baby used to eat and poop only two things at one point of time, which means I am going to get old and one day I am going to die. This is fact of life. When we start recognizing these small facts of life about ourselves more than anything else, more than anybody else, about ourselves, then we can see that we have very little reason to be unhappy. In fact, you have more reason to be happy, because all the time you can look into yourself, you can improve the quality of your mind. By improving the quality of your mind, you can improve the quality of your life. That always is a better opportunity. So, but for that, to look for better opportunities, to learn is something that we are unwilling to take. We always want our houses, our cars, our jobs, our families, everything to be perfectly in order. A little bit of imperfection is wonderful. a lot more imperfection is still farther wonderful, I tell you. Then you learn. These are opportunities for learn. Little bit of pain is little opportunity to learn. Great pain is great opportunity to learn. Extreme pain is wonderful, greatest opportunity to learn. Because when you are inside the house, having all the luxuries of life inside, then you don't really understand that things are like this. So I go to all these, I mean, I have been traveling for more than a month. I go to different places, and like some of these places will be comfortable, some of the places will be more comfortable, some of the places will be less comfortable. I actually look for a little bit of imperfection everywhere, and I end up finding it. Yes, this thing is at least imperfect. Means basically there is nothing called perfection in this world. World is basically imperfect. Something does not work. Something is at least little bit of malfunctioning. That's great. Because it is the nature of the world, there is nothing called perfection in this world. World is basically imperfect. Trust me, it is. That was one of the main reasons I became a monk. Because I used to have a view that there are imperfections in this world. But then more I saw the world, then I understood, no, that is not the right view. The basic nature of the world is to imperfect, to get imperfect today or tomorrow. Because it is changing all the time. It is never constant, never permanent. So if that is the basic nature, then we have to acknowledge it. We have to accept it. And we have to live with it still. And when we acknowledge it, when we accept it, and then we can let go of the thought of perfection, of our wrong perception of perfection, then we can live happily thinking, yes, it has gone bad because it was supposed to go bad. That's the nature of things. That's the very nature of the whole world. Things go bad because they are supposed to. There is nothing unusual about things getting bad. It cannot be. Today I am healthy, tomorrow I will fall sick. That is the nature. Tomorrow I am unhealthy, I am sick. Day after tomorrow I might be healthy more, or I might get more and more sick. But the thing is, it is still changing. There is nothing, no perfection. But our sheer unwise reluctance to accept and acknowledge the imperfections that are within us and that are around us, and stubborn behavior not to discover oneself rather than trying to discover the whole world is what leads to more and more dissatisfaction for all people. Sometimes I use these jargons and strong languages just to make a point. I was giving a talk in a place called Naropa University in Colorado. And then I was basically what I'm telling you, this more or less similar thing, that there are good things inside us, there are bad things inside us. And I was telling, and then this elderly lady, she told, which you mean to say that there are something wrong inside us as well? I said, yes, there are a lot of things getting wrong all the time. Then she said, no, if we think like this, there may not be anything wrong, but then I actually shouted at her and saying, keep quiet, there is something fundamentally wrong with you and all of us. Then she actually understood. She said, yeah, maybe you are right. There is something fundamentally wrong with all of us. Fundamentally wrong because we are not really careful about knowing what is wrong. That is fundamentally wrong. We are not really paying attention to what is wrong in us and how do we rectify those wrong things. That is the fundamentally wrong thing. And then if we are doing it, then we are not really progressing in the real sense of the term. We are only just living, existing, and then someday we will die, of course. That's the nature of the world. And after death, I do not know. I mean, if you are not really rightly living at this point of time, do not come to monks and temples at your death moment and say, please do something about me. That's not going to happen. Trust me. None can do anything. It's a waste of life. Let me again use strong language. Yes, it's a waste of life. Like a lot of people, when they grow old and then they are sometimes incapable of walking, and then they come to the temple and say, I can meditate. I sometimes tell them, what did you do when you say you have lived for 85 years? What did you do all these 85 years? Now you are unable to walk properly. How are you going to sit for 1 hour in meditation? Is it possible? It's not possible. It's late. It's almost, the time is, the expiry date is almost nearby. So you still have the opportunity to do something about yourself. To start with your own ethical conduct. To start with your own meditation. To start with making small discoveries about yourself. And by these discoveries, by means of these discoveries, to make your life better, to improve the quality of your life. These are things you can do. As human beings, we can understand things. As human beings, we can improve the quality of our life. We can do something better always for ourselves. And when we can do better for ourselves, we can necessarily do better for other people. First of all, you have to do good to yourself. Make no mistake about it. A poor man cannot do charity. There is no opportunity for a poor man to do charity because he doesn't have enough food in his stomach. So first of all, you should get rich within. Then only you are able to do good to other people. But if you are just remain poor inside, then do not try to help other people. Buddha said, till the time I became enlightened, I didn't go around and teach people. So at least not, if not enlightenment, at least some qualitative improvement you can bring about in your life before you actually start going and telling people a lot of big jargons. And yes, of course, when you improve the quality of your life, you can help other people in the right way, in the best possible way. But first, do something about yourself. And then, of course, go and help other people. It's wonderful to help people, but it is still far more better to help oneself first before you actually start helping other people. Because if somebody is without hands, he really cannot go and pick up the luggage of other people. A man without hand cannot do it. So you have to have your own hands. Then only you can help other people, or you can pick up the luggage of other people. So with this, I will conclude. And if you have any questions, then you can ask.
Thank you, Venerable. And yes, we have time. If you have any question, you can ask. Only today the time to ask them questions.
Yes, please.
I noticed you have maroon robes, but I thought you were Theravadin.
I am Theravadin. Theravadins have they go to different, like if you go to Myanmar, for example. My higher ordination was in the Myanmar tradition. I mean, mostly same in Theravadins. So Myanmar people wear maroon robes. And then if you go to Thailand, they will wear this kind of robes. Or some of them wear like something similar to this. So they have, like in Sri Lanka, they would wear. So it's a lot of colors. It's colorful thing, basically. Yeah.
Oh, there is one moment of perfection in life, and that's laughter. Mm. It's momentary, but it's perfect.
Right.
Austin, so what made you decide to become a monk after you've led such a secular life and were working towards being a lawyer and everything? What changed?
The thing is, I mean, of course, I wanted to practice more dharma, and then as a lawyer, of course, I had my professional obligations, I had my a lot of personal life also, my family, this thing. So, and I didn't get enough of time to practice. And it was more like a half-hearted thing, basically. I would think I would do something today, and then something other come up, and then I am unable to do it, and again I think I'll do something tomorrow. So it just gets dragged on. And then one day I thought, if I have to do it, I have to do it anyways. Let's just do it.
I think I heard you be completely dismissive of the psychoanalytic tradition in Western culture.
I'm not dismissive of them. I'm saying they are ill-equipped. Ill-equipped.
All of them?
Majority of them. I guess all of them. I dismiss all of them, yes. By my personal knowledge, I dismiss all of them, seeing their ability. That's a very broad statement, yes, I do make.
It's a very broad statement. I can only speak from my own personal experience.
Right.
I can't speak to the entire history of anybody who is, the entire history of psychoanalysts.
Do psychoanalysts know themselves correctly before they start looking into other people?
I think they're probably like everyone else. Some aren't.
Yeah.
You know, some do and some aren't. All I can tell you is that I went through a very difficult period of my life.
Yes.
And a psychoanalyst more or less saved my life.
Yes.
And she was extremely knowledgeable about herself and about humanity.
Precisely. Right.
So I can only speak from my personal experience to this question.
Before you answered my question already, did you not say she was sure of herself?
She was an extremely wise and compassionate person.
If she is wise, she must be knowing herself, isn't it?
Yes, I'm sure she is.
So in that answers your question. Then she knew herself first, then she went around and tried to help other people. Most psychoanalysts do not do this simple task.
So there are some who do, though.
There might be. But I still have, very reason I have, objection is, when they make it a profession for earning money, maybe very exceptional cases, there are wonderful people. But then always it's motivated by something, greed or earning more money or getting more patient and things like that. And or maybe they get patients and they try to help. It's not that they don't try to help. That I never deny that they don't try to help. They try to help. But a lot of cases, they themselves are not really in a position to understand. At least the kind of questions these people were asking, these so-called doctors with experience were asking. So that gave me a little... I was not really... delighted to hear such questions. I was thinking if they were with this kind of knowledge, they were trying to help people. For example, they were asking me, somebody with some obsession comes, how do I deal with that person? I was thinking he must have dealt with dozens of obsessed people in his life. He still doesn't know how to deal with people with obsession. So which means they are not really, where does the obsession come from? First of all, the first question, if I have to deal somebody with obsession, where does the obsession come from? What is the root of all obsessions? If I were to ask you this, what do you say?
Are you asking me?
Yes.
What is the root
of all obsessions?
The root of all obsessions?
Yes.
Some kind of lack of internal understanding.
Right. Right, which means there is lack of wisdom, basically. If you say lack of proper understanding, means lack of wisdom.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right?
Yes. In the biggest sense, yes.
Yes. It has to be. There is no other way of looking at it. So if that is the case, then these psychoanalysts or these people who treat people, who are acting as therapists, they should be knowing that this poor fellow has a problem of not knowing that this obsession is because of his wrong understanding. His lack of wrong understanding. Simple?
His lack of understanding.
Yes.
Wrong understanding.
Yes.
Yes, but often that lack of understanding is deeply buried in the person in the way that...
So what his job is...
Psychoanalysis is a kind of archaeology of the soul. It's like getting down to some... that point where wisdom would have taken you one way. But
so what his basic job, ideal job, would be to help him first of all understand that his obsession is basically coming out of some kind of wrong understanding about himself, and then helping this person to know himself better so that he can by himself see this obsession of mine is because of my own wrong understanding. That is the right way of uprooting the problem. Right?
It is uprooting the problem? I'm sorry?
That is the right way of uprooting the problem.
Yes, it is.
Yes. But would most people do like that? They would all give all kinds of hanky-pankies and things, and they will divert their minds in other ways, but never go to the root of the problems. Majority of the problem, because the doctor himself is most of the times unable to recognize this obsession is not just obsession. It is basically wrong understanding of some phenomena that is stuck within him. And I have to go to this wrong phenomena. I have to guide this person to go to this wrong understanding and see by himself that this is wrong understanding, and then uproot it by himself, this wrong understanding. That is the right way of treating. How many of these therapists would do like this?
I think that is the purpose of therapy, though.
But most people don't do it.
It is that, you know, that is to make the conscious, make the unconscious conscious, which is the purpose of
therapy. Yeah, but do most people do it with so analytically? I mean, I have not studied a single thing about psychology and things like that. I have no idea. No, I have not. No authority to say on this, but this, when I say a problem in a person, I see the wrong understanding. This fundamental thing I see in myself, I see in everybody. I don't really have to go and look, read books. I see person, I know this is this wrong understanding that leads to this problem, leading to this consequence. It is simple. You can do it. I can do it. Everybody can do it. It is as simple as this. It's as simple as that. Mm-hmm. I don't need to read big books.
Pandey, I know you kind of touched upon the question that was asked earlier about you making the choice and becoming a bhikkhu. It's interesting, though, because you come from traditionally a Hindu and Brahmin family.
Right.
I'm curious as to how that transition was, what type of dynamic did that create? Was it a smooth transition as far as the familial relationships were concerned in vis-à-vis your question, your decision?
It wasn't smooth, to say the least, but I made it still by my determination, kind of. My father, of course, kind of, he was more liberal in his ideas, so he didn't have much of a problem. I mean, he asked me, I explained, this is the problem with life and this is what I wish to do. He said, maybe you are right. After all these years, I think life is not really a bed of roses. So maybe you are doing the right thing. So my father, but other people had their own big or small objections, and I did override them by using my determination. But I thought I was doing the right thing. I still think I'm doing the right thing. So if I have to do the right thing, sometimes I have to ignore the objection of people who may not understand, you see. Otherwise, just to keep other people happy, if I do only things that are not proper for myself, then also I am not doing justice to myself. So someday I had to take a call and do it. The lady in the back had a question. Who is sitting in the chair? She had a question.
Why is there so much suffering in this world?
Why is there so much of suffering inside us? Same reason there is so much of suffering outside. There is no different reason. There is greed. There is hatred. There is ignorance. The reason we suffer. Rest of all the people also suffer for those things, not for anything else. But the problem is, we do not understand that inside us there is greed, hatred, ignorance. These people also do not understand they have greed, hatred, ignorance within them, causing them suffering. So it just continues to get prolonged in various ways, big or small. But the root is always the same. Yeah.
when we have ignorance and we have these wrong thoughts that lead to wrong actions, how do we cut that? Because if out of our ignorance will not come wisdom,
right?
How do you have the approach to make those steps towards wisdom, towards the insight that will not perpetuate wrong thought, wrong action?
Wrong thought and wrong action. That's the natural way, in most cases, it happens. So you say wrong thought, wrong action. So before, sometimes you can see the direct consequence of your action being harmful. Some cases you can see by yourself. So in those cases, it is kind of easy to detect, yes, these are the actions committed by me, these are the consequences which are harmful. Okay. So maybe if that is the case, then I can make an effort, sincere effort, to reduce them. It will not disappear in a single day, but yes, it will be reduced. If I am to make a sincere effort, it will reduce day by day for sure. And then still better is whatever thoughts that we generate again and again, reflect on those thoughts, see how they are going to produce beneficial things or harmful things. Though what are these thoughts going to produce in turn? Reflecting on thoughts itself. So then we can always be keep and watch on ourselves, seeing what thoughts I generate. Is this a good thought? What is it going to produce? What action is it going to produce? What reaction is it going to produce within me? So if you have to look like that again and again, then a majority of the times, we can get rid of these wrong behaviors. Still, some of it will remain because our wisdom has not reached the final level. We have to wait till that time when it reaches the final level. Then it is fully uprooted. Till that time, at least some of the imperfections remain. It is not never fully perfect till one becomes enlightened, so to speak. Yes. But yes, majority of the cases we can do it. We can. Yes, please.
So how do we improve the good qualities inside of us and decrease the bad qualities through meditation? Is there a certain type of meditation? Is there a certain progression?
When you have good qualities, do you exactly know what are the good qualities in you? Do you exactly know what are the bad qualities in you? So you have to, first of all, know exactly what are the good qualities, what are the bad qualities that are there in me. So for that, of course, you have to do meditation. There is no other way of knowing it. So you have to precisely know, these are the good things in me, these are not the good things in me. And then when you know them, then only you explore them further and see the good things that produce happiness, bad things that produce unhappiness. When you reach this level, then only you start cutting down on your bad things and developing the good things. So you have to go stage by stage, finding your good qualities and bad qualities, finding the consequence of those good qualities and bad qualities, then only trying to, then the process of cutting down is natural, not forceful. Because when you know these are harmful, these are not harmful, then you naturally develop the ones which are not harmful. You naturally start giving up which are harmful. Then it's a natural process of evolution, or your own mental evolution. So you have to go like this.
Doesn't matter which, let's just say, we do sit there and meditate on what our true good and bad qualities are.
No, you don't have to you don't have to look for good and bad qualities. For example, you are watching your breath, okay? And then you see breath is changing, okay? Sometimes it's fast, sometimes it's slow. you can see a little deeper, and you will see it has a connection with our thoughts. The thoughts that we are generating actually sort of changing the pattern of our breathing. The thoughts, the good ones, they are making our breath more and slower and calmer, more and more calm. The bad ones, making our thoughts, making our breath agitated. So breath is a great indicator of what kind of thoughts we are generating all the time. So if you watch your breath, you are getting the indication, then it is bad, this time it is good. Then you can look at that time, what is the bad thing? Oh, this might be hatred, this might be greed. You see? Then you look at that time, then you directly see the greed as greed, hatred as hatred. Then you know this is a bad thing that's causing this reaction. Then you try to do something about it. So you can go step by step. You can see your breath. Breath is a great indicator of our mind. If you can see the breath, if you can understand the breath, you will understand your mind also.
Okay, so after that process, I guess what I'm asking is the progression. Do we just focus on one until we feel comfortable? Let's just say, I notice there's hatred.
Yes, when you notice hatred, then you see. When you notice hatred, then you see hatred. What I mean by seeing hatred is, see how is it arising? What is it doing to the mind? What is the reaction that is produced by hatred? You have to see all these things. These are more and more advanced meditative stages. So when you see the arising, the impact, the consequence, all that you see by yourself, then you will automatically understand that this is maybe not so good. Maybe I have to do something about it. I have to do something about this. So then the rectification is natural, easy. Otherwise, it is rectification based on some kind of either just kind of blind faith or just kind of some forceful effort, something like that. It's not natural, and then it doesn't really help. That's the thing. So you don't have to go. When you do meditation, always remember for all of everyone, you don't really have to think of going by stages. If you do it correctly, you will naturally go by stages. If you are not doing it correctly, you will never go by stages. If you do it correctly, you will anyways go by stages. You don't really have to think about reaching another stage. That you don't need to bother about. It automatically leads. That's the beauty of doing meditation, highlighted in the right way. Otherwise, it doesn't.